Welcome, everybody, to Juwanza for Life. My name is Juwanza. Good morning. I know. Everybody's up, kind of got thrown off. Today is the day that we set our clocks forward. And I know people losing an hour of sleep and, people coming to the show, groggy eyes, wiping their eyes. But I guarantee you, just hold on, because you're going to be wide awake in a second. My special guest is back. If you've been following us, you know that normally once a month we have on the show a very, very powerful brother who's been doing positive work. I mean, just going around, and everybody that's willing and committed to their own healing, he can work with them and does work with them with fabulous results. My special guest today is none other than Dr. Ted Watkins. That's right. Dr. Ted Watkins is back. Yeah, he's my special guest. And again, like I said, he's been on the show. We've done many, many shows on different aspects of holistic health. And I'm very fortunate to have someone of his caliber on as my special guest. He's a graduate of Howard University College of Medicine back in 1977, and has his own general practice today in the Washington, D.C. area, or in Washington, D.C. And started on the holistic health path before many people that are on the path today got on the path. I mean, he's a pioneer in holistic health, well known throughout the United States and I'm sure abroad as well. And today we're going to be talking about a topic that affects a lot. It doesn't only affect the person that has contracted the disease, but it affects everybody in the family associated with that person that contracts the disease. We're going to be talking about today how to prevent and reverse Alzheimer's, how to prevent and reverse Alzheimer's naturally. Of course, everybody who has a loved one or knows somebody who has Alzheimer's knows that, like I said, it can affect everybody. I mean, to sit and watch somebody just before your eyes just go down until there's nothing left is a hurtful thing. And we're here to tell you today that there's hope. There's hope. And my special guest, I want to get to him because he's the bringer of good news this morning, Dr. Ted Watkins. Welcome back to Juwanza for Life. Great to have you, my brother, and ready for another powerful show. Thanks for being my guest.
Well, I'm certainly happy to be with you today, and I'm glad to be back. It's been a while, but we're excited to be back, and you're doing a great work in the community, and we're glad whenever we're available to come and support what you're doing.
Well, thank you, Doctor. Again, it's easy to do what I do when I see people like you doing what you do, just going around and healing people. I mean, again, as I mentioned, those that are willing to listen.
Well, you know, I have to say that I don't heal anybody. I point them to the power. I point them to what God has given us, and He does the healing. So I'm just a messenger. And you're so right. This thing, Alzheimer's, is such a amazing thing. And we've actually known about this disease for a long time. But it just sort of seemed like it just came up like some spring flowers, in the 70s and 80s, we started really talking about it. But, this disease goes back to 1901. 1901. Wow. You know, they say that this patient, Auguste, was taken to this insane asylum in Frankfurt, Germany, and she was taken by her husband, and he described her as a delusional, forgetful, disoriented woman who could no longer carry out her homemaking functions. And the doctor that did the workup on her was Dr. Alzheimer. And so that's where the the clinical disease really started, and he started describing stuff that was in her brain after she died. You know, he noticed that there was some plaques and some tangles in the brain, and you know, he described this, and you know, people have since started looking at these brains, and they're seeing that these plaques and tangles are mainly in people who are older in age. And the more plaques and tangles you have, the more likely you are to have this thing we call Alzheimer's, you know. But I guess he looked at the plaques and tangles, but he didn't really appreciate the involvement of the blood vessels. And that's okay. The thing that really, you know, and perhaps media hasn't really talked enough about it, or the health profession, that this is a disease similar to the other chronic degenerative diseases that affect our community, like heart disease and strokes, you know. Even diabetes affects the vasculature. Kidney failure affects the vasculature. And so, you know, when they started looking at these brains, they found out that these brains are all clogged up. The arteries are all clogged up. Just like a person who has heart disease, you know. And when you're not getting blood flow to the brain, you're not getting what? Oxygen and other nutrients to the brain. And so the brain cells start dying off.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're talking about Alzheimer's, you know, associated with vascular disease. And that's amazing to most people, because it really just hasn't been talked that way. But we need to know that that's really the issue. And, you know, I did a similar interview about 2 years ago now with a guy by the name of Dr. Neil Bernard. You know, Neil Bernard is the founder of an organization, Physicians for Responsible Medicine. Mm-hmm. And they became known because they sued one of the pediatric associations, and after a lengthy court battle, won that they cannot recommend milk to babies under age 2. And they won the case, but this same guy wrote a book last year, or year before last. Time sort of flies. You know, as you get older, man, time moves fast. So I don't know what that is all about, but at any rate, you know, his book was on nutrition and dementia, of which Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. And what he said in the book was that, contrary to popular opinion, that Alzheimer's is a disease of some heavy metal detoxification, lead or aluminum, you know, that really Alzheimer's is a disease brought on by our friendly food, animal fat.
Animal fat.
Animal fat. He was the first person I heard to say that animal fat is the number one cause of Alzheimer's. And he based it on some studies that was done, I think it was University of Chicago and other places. And he talked about saturated animal fat, Alzheimer's, or dementia.
Let's be very clear here, Doc, because there are some people out there that might say, like, animal fat. Man, I always cut the fat off my meat before I eat it. You know what I'm saying? You're not just talking about cutting the fat from around the steak. Okay, when you say animal fat, you mean what?
Well, let's just look at that. Let's cut the excess fat off the meat, and that's good, you know. And maybe one of the reasons that Alzheimer's is coming up now is because it's not the visible fat alone. If you take, like some Africans do, take that piece of chicken or a piece of beef after you cut the fat off and you put it in some hot boiling water and watch what happens. You have all of this fat coming to the surface, fat that was always there, but that was in between the muscle, actually in the muscle. It's just a part of it, you know. We don't raise animals like we used to. And so as a result, these animals are raised to be large, to get them large fast. They do it by getting them fat. Why? We sell food by what? The pound. And the bigger the animal is, the more money they can make for the animal. It makes sense?
Yes,
and so they force these animals, giving them hormones, giving them all kind of foods that will make them fat. They get fat, and they get fat fast. And so the fat in these animals, we now know, is deadly. You know, we don't have to just stop at Alzheimer's. Heart disease, we know that heart disease is associated with meat eating. And I hate to talk about this, Juwanza, because I know a lot of folk are cussing me. There's a guy who calls my radio station. He's so angry with me because I speak out against meat. And I used to didn't speak out so strongly against it. I would tell a person that I thought vegetarianism was the right way. But after I started listening to talk to Cardwell Edelson from Cleveland Clinic, and how strong he was talking about it, I said, you know, our community is sicker than his community. We need to just let people know. Now, if you want to eat it, that's no problem, but you eat it at your own risk, because you're increasing the likelihood of diabetes. You know, number one cause of diabetes, animal fat. You know, fat makes you what? Fat. And the fatter you are, the more likely you are to have diabetes. 57% of American women, black women, are obese. Obese, not overweight, obese. You know, that means they have a BMI of greater than 30. 50% of black women in this country. I mean, that's horrible. I remember when the number was 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not an old man. You know. 73 ain't old, brother, you know. So
it's young, man.
That's right. Because I stay away from that animal fat. You know? But yeah, heart disease, you know. I was just studying a couple weeks ago, an in-depth study on kidney failure. Kidney failure, animal fat, animal protein, cholesterol, kidney failure. That's what they say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Strokes, animal fat, refined sugar. You know, I mean, you know, do we need to say more? Diabetes, animal fat, and you know, I just did a lecture yesterday, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to do one again. NBC4 has. It has been doing it for like 20 years or so. This health fair down at the convention center, and so I'm going to speak today. I talked about yesterday diabetes. We now know that insulin resistance, meaning that insulin can't work, is there, but it can't function properly. There's a resistance to it by the cells, And so the glucose can't get in and be metabolized. The number one cause of insulin resistance is animal fat. The number one cause of diabetes is insulin resistance. So Juwanza, when I say this, I say it with a lot of pain, because people have grown up thinking that they had to eat this stuff. But they're growing up to die prematurely, because the more they eat it, you know, all things being equal, the faster they're going to die. And die of all these diseases that will just, you know, it's not just like Moses went up in the mountain and God took him. They died sick.
And suffering.
Sick. Suffering. It's interesting. In one of the articles I was reading, they said that, you know, well, people die of old age. And the author says, no, they don't die of old age. They looked at people who were 100, did autopsies of people who were 100 years and older. And all of them had some disease process going on in their bodies that killed them. So we're dying of diseases, and these diseases are caused to a great degree by our stress, our lack of exercise, our diets, and the fact that we don't clean our bodies out on a regular basis.
But let's say, doctor, you take somebody, for example, that's got Alzheimer's, and the people that are caring for the individual, you know, could be mama, could be daddy, you know, the people that are caring for them have seen the light, okay? They're vegan, okay? The people that are caring for the person with the Alzheimer's are vegan, and they've taken mama or daddy off of meat, dairy, sugar, you know, all of those things. I'm sure that's the way to go. But, of course, in doing so, the expectation is that the Alzheimer's is going, or dementia, is going to reverse itself. So in addition, because there may be somebody that's listening that's experienced that, they don't, you know, mama don't eat no meat, you know, mama don't eat dairy and sugar and all of that stuff. And I'm sure that it's a case-by-case situation. Everybody's different. Everybody's, you know, body's going to respond differently. And it could depend upon other issues as well. It might not be that the person just has Alzheimer's. They may have Alzheimer's and other issues that might complicate, you know, Alzheimer's. You might have somebody that might have Alzheimer's and high blood pressure, or Alzheimer's and diabetes or something. So it might not just be Alzheimer's alone. But if somebody has taken the parent or the loved one off of the dairy, the sugar, the meat, the expectation, of course, is that the Alzheimer's will reverse. Can that be expected? Because I've seen a study, or read yesterday, as a matter of fact, that there have been studies shown that where once upon a time it was thought that brain cells could not reproduce, that they had done some studies and found that, in fact, and you can correct me on this if it's incorrect, that there were cases, in fact, where they had done studies in laboratories and found that brain cells, in fact, did reproduce, and in the area of the brain that would be responsible for memory. And
that's very true. The dilemma was that, okay, if Alzheimer's, if dementia is a disease of low blood flow, we now know from the work of Nathan Prinigan and Shirley and Dean Arnish, Edelston, you know, Codwell Campbell, and many others, that Ted Watkins, that we can reverse heart disease. All right, we can because we can open up those blood vessels. Edelston and Dean and Shirley Arnish were the first ones that I'm aware that actually did it, where they put patients on a lifestyle program. They did angiograms before and after, and they showed that you could literally open up those blood vessels if you change their diet. Well, the problem with the brain is that once you lose oxygen, those cells die out. And heretofore, as we've been told, that once those cells are dead, they're dead. You can't bring them back to life. Well, what we found is that that's not really true. That as you said, that given certain things, the brain cells can be rejuvenated again, but it takes time. And one of the pieces that I talked about yesterday is that we have to be radical. See, we want to make little bitty changes and get big results. You know, it just doesn't happen that way. And if you want to really get the results, then you got to do the time. You know, you got to do the time. And one of the things that I've talked about it over the years. When it was back in 1982-83, when I was trying to decide to leave surgery, I called a friend of mine. He was the associate director of the Viral Institute at NIH, and his name, Ernie Plotter, was his name. And I said, Ernie, I said, I believe God wants me to leave surgery and go into alternative medicine. But everybody tells me that I'm just crazy, you know. Well, my wife didn't tell me that's but everybody, just but everybody else said, you know, you're crazy, you know, you're good in surgery, it's a powerful field, and you know, little project boy makes good. But Ernie listened to me. He asked me, what did I want to do? What did I see God doing through me in this area, you know? And then he started telling me some stories, and I don't remember one of them, but it was about, he said, no, Ted, I'm on a lot of boards, and one of them is a nursing home. He said, and they took the clients and literally put them on leashes like dogs, man, and they walked them. And they were walking them primarily just to give them a little exercise. But when they got them up to about 5 miles a day, 5 miles a day, their brains start functioning again. And the Alzheimer's was reversed. So this really should have given us a clue that what we're dealing with, because we know that when we exercise like that, well, what are we doing? We're promoting the circulation of the blood. And with circulation comes oxygen. And so we're restoring the oxygen to the blood. And that's the thing that we need to do in Alzheimer's. So, yes, diet is very important. And we'll talk more specifically about it a little later and some of the things specifically that you need to be having in your diet. So diet is very important. But it's also important to get mama or grandma out there and let them start walking, you know. Mm-hmm. Get them out there walking. And one of the problems that we have, and I guess one of the reasons they had to put them on leashes, is these folks don't want to get out there and walk, you know. And they are very, very resistant. You know, my mother came to stay with me, and I told my wife, you know, I just want you to know, before we get married, that when my mother's old and can't stay alone, she's not going to the nursing home. She's coming to stay with me. So if you can't deal with that, then you don't want to marry me. And she said, no, baby. You know, and I told her, I said, well, the same thing applies to your parents, you know, your mama and your grandma. You know, same thing applies. Well, my mother came and stayed with me. And She actually died at 92. She had no, quote, medical problems per se, or no medication. But her mind just went on her. And she would sometimes say stuff and just be contrary. And I said, this is not my mother. Mm-hmm. My mother don't talk like that, don't say things like that to me, you know. She's cooperative, and she would get resistant and wouldn't want to go to sleep. And I said, Mama, you got to go to bed. No, you go to bed. Oh man, it was horrible, man. And mm-hmm. and maybe 12 o'clock in the morning, she wants to stay up. And finally, mm-hmm. I'd have to just go on to bed because I got to get up and go to work. So I have to lock all the doors and go mm-hmm. on to bed, you know. So that's what we're dealing with, because these brain cells have not gotten the oxygen, and so they're not able to function well. And so one author said, well, you know, you get the blood flow back, but their memory is gone because they have the blood cells have died off. I mean, the brain cells have died off, so they can think, but they can't remember who they are. They can't remember their children's name. They can't, you know what I'm talking about? This is because of the injury that's occurred to the brain. But praise the Lord, we now know, based on arterial studies, that the brain can actually function as it gets older. You can restore that function
for somebody,
if you give it the right stuff.
So for somebody whose mother or father or anybody, loved one, grandparent or whatever, has actually lost the memory, okay? Like, for example, you said that your mother changed and, you know, she turned into somebody that you knew was not her. You knew that that was
mm-hmm.
something else going
mm-hmm.
on that wasn't what you knew. Can somebody who may be listening to this show right now, whose mother or father may have done just that, just what you said your mother did, can they have the expectation that through exercise, through proper diet, through making sure that from this day forward, even if it's from this day forward, that brain gets the oxygen, plenty of water, rest, that they can have the expectation that this can be reversed and that they can get old mama back, or shall I say young mama back, or young daddy back, or young grandpa back. They can actually look forward to, over time, like you mentioned, it doesn't happen overnight. People doing things and expecting results tomorrow, but it might be months from now. It could be, you know, God only knows how long it could take. But that expectation is real, and it's there. They can actually get the young mama back.
Well, you know, I know you're astute interviewer, so you've looked at the topic, and you know that the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I always put the caveat, you have to be willing to do the work, you know. I see people, man, they have ignored this cancer, and it's gotten large as a grapefruit. And they want to know, Doc, when we're going to do the next MRI. They've been on the program less than 30 days. When we going to do the next MRI? You don't need no MRI. You just look at that thing. That thing is monstrous. We got to put in some time, you know. And we got to make some changes. And these changes has to be permanent, long-term, radical changes to reverse some of these diseases that we're talking about here. Some other things are not nearly as difficult and can get changed much more rapidly. But because the brain cells, the nerve cells grow so slowly, all right, because these cells grow so slowly, it's going to take time. But it can't happen. I had fully expected to have reversed my mother. You know, I'd planned to start this rehab center, and my mama was going to be my first client. And her birthday was June 29th, but our anniversary, my wife and our anniversary is June the 30th. And so I'd taken my wife up to the Poconos and going to come back and celebrate my mama's birthday. And, you know, and we had her in a, actually, she had gotten so bad she had stopped eating, so I had to put a feeding tube in, and she was in a rehab facility, and they fed her and then let her lay down flat, and she regurgitated, she what we call aspirate, she aspirated, and she died, And I was just, I was so angry, man. I wanted to fight, but I had to let it go. You know, well, I didn't have to. I chose to let it go. But yeah, this thing takes work. And if we're willing to work, we can have the expectation that this thing can reverse.
Well, what advice would you give to the caretakers that are dealing with the person who has the Alzheimer's in the meantime, while we're, you know, waiting for mama or daddy to heal, while we're waiting for to see the signs of improvement? Because the caretakers, in many cases, they're going through, man. You know, like you said, you know, staying up late nights, got to lock doors, sometimes you can't leave the person in the house by themselves. I mean, you got to make adjustments now.
Yeah,
you know,
I had to have someone come in full time when I was at work and take care of my mama.
Mm-hmm.
And, but did it, and was happy to do it, you know? It takes a commitment, you know, and it also takes a commitment to getting well. You got to get out there. You got to start walking. As I said, when they got these people up to around 5 miles a day, we're talking about around 2 hours of brisk walking a day. And I don't remember how long it took them to get them up there, up to that level. Probably at least a month or two to get them to that level. But once they got them to that level, the brain started functioning. I mean, it was amazing. So that's where we need to go. We need to change those diets. We need to. And then there are specific foods that they've studied and have been shown to have positive effects on the brain. You know, blueberries have been shown to actually decrease the symptoms of Alzheimer's, and you know, early Alzheimer's. But if it works in early, that means it'll work in late. It just takes more and longer. Strawberries, the same thing. You know, your green leafy vegetables. You know, they have all these antioxidants in them, you know, and they go in and they help to repair the damage that's been done to the cells. And these foods, I mean, it's just amazing that what has been done looking at these various food entities.
What about water in the brain? I'm sure that water would play a large role because many people don't drink enough water. The amount of water necessary to maintain a healthy, functioning brain. Can you talk about water in the brain and the necessity for people to make sure that they're drinking an adequate amount of water and what effect that would have on somebody with Alzheimer's? They would certainly need more water, correct?
Yeah, well, water is good for everything. It helps to lubricate the cells, get rid of the toxins. And those toxins are important. I've put people on my fasting cleansing program. Have you ever gone on my program, Juwanza?
No, sir. Not yours.
We have to put you on it because ours is really unique in many respects. But at any rate, we put them on it. And one of the things that we see is that their minds are clearer. After the 14, most people do 14 days. You find that their minds are clearer. They're less depressed. They sleep better, you know. At the same time, we notice that the skin is clearer. I tell people that one of the side effects of going on my cleansing program is you get better looking. So this outside cleansing is taking place. You can see it. It's visible. Well, Dr. Kinney, who was my professor of med school, dermatology chief, he said that you can look at the skin and tell what's going on inside the body. So if your skin is clearing up with cleansing, getting these poisons out, then the same thing is going on in your body, and in your brain is trying to clean up itself. So, you know, that's what the rationale is. You know, You gotta clean them up. You gotta give them nutrition. You gotta give them exercise and the oxygen. And if you do these things, you should have the expectation that you're going to get better. You should have the expectation that you're going, that your loved one can get better.
To everybody that's listening by phone, if you have a question or comment, like to join the conversation, all you have to do is press 1, and I'll bring you on, and you can ask Dr. Watkins any question you have. If you're listening online, the call-in number is 347-324-5727. Again, that's 347-324-5727. Doc, can we talk for a moment about sugar and the brain? You know, a lot of times people who might have someone in their family that has Alzheimer's, for those who are not necessarily on the holistic path and don't know the dangers of sugar, could you talk about sugar and the brain and the effect that sugar may have on somebody that is dealing with some form of dementia?
Well, you know, sugar causes a lot of inflammation. And it's true. And inflammation, when it starts in the body, I did a piece last year on inflammation and the brain. Well, soon as inflammation hits the body, that same inflammation hits the brain. I mean, and there are specific chemicals, hormones that kick in with this inflammation, and because the inflammation is the body's attempt to get rid of the offender, you know, you somebody come in your house, you get your gun, you shoot them, you cause an inflammation. Well, the body starts shooting the sugar and produces this inflammation. The inflammation on the short term is good, but on the long term is quite detrimental because it destroys the cells. Well, this happens in Alzheimer's also, or dementia in general. Well, when people get older, they have a craving for sugar. My mother would eat a gallon of ice cream a day if I allowed her to do it. And I never forget one of my good friends, schoolmates, father got married when he was 96.
Wow.
To a woman who was 92. Mm. He was a professor. He'll be 102 his birthday, and she'll be 100. So, 99. So they live in Alabama in Huntsville. He was a professor at the college where I went to, Oakwood, which is now Oakwood University. And the woman's daughter, one of her daughters, was a classmate of mine, her son, matter of fact, I was his lab assistant when he was in the 12th grade. You know, I was chemistry lab assistant for the academy there. They had a reception for them up here, you know, this friend who's a law professor at Howard, and his sister was a English head of an English department at Washington Avenue University, and they had a big reception, and a lot of their friends, elderly folk, were there, and I've been knowing many of these people just about all my life, or many, many years, and I was just sitting down talking with them, and somehow, well, my mother was there, and I started telling how frustrated it was for me that she just loved sugar, and they said, well, you know, it's not just you, Doc. mm-hmm. as people get older, their taste buds change, and they want a lot of sugar. And the sugar is causing a lot of inflammation. But our seniors are eating it in higher concentrations than ever before. And then you add the milk to it, the dairy, and you really got a problem. Sugar and dairy, you know.
Well, now, what about allopathic medicine and a person that's dealing with Alzheimer's? Because they might be the patient, the loved one, the mom, the dad, the grandfather, grandmother, might be on some sort of medication. You know, I've actually seen cases where a person might be in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, and then once they actually got on the medication that the doctor was prescribing, instead of it, you know, subsiding, the symptoms would seem to increase. I mean, the person got worse, you know, where as opposed to getting better, once they got on the doctor's medication, I mean, it seemed like it just took the whole condition to a whole nother level. So if you could talk about just even allopathic medicine and the harmful maybe effects of allopathic medicine as it relates to Alzheimer's, because the doctors are giving the patient something that's affecting the brain as well. So if you could talk about that.
Well, you know, to be honest, it doesn't always make it worse. You know, sometimes it can actually delay some of the change. But the problem is that it's not making it better. You know, it's the person doesn't deteriorate as rapidly in some cases. But in some cases, people can because of allergic reactions and different things. And the side effects that's specifically highlighted in them can get worse. But in general, they don't get worse, but they don't get better. You know, it's just putting a Band-Aid over the cancer. Cancer keeps growing, you know, and you just give them a bigger Band-Aid, you know. Mm-hmm. You get a bigger Band-Aid because the cancer's growing, but you can't see it, you know. But, of course, with Alzheimer's, you can see it and feel it and taste it. It's terrible. So we have to look for other things. You know, there have been over 72,000 studies on Alzheimer's, published studies on Alzheimer's in the last 20, 30 years. And yet it's not moving toward any improvement in the clinical condition of these patients. Over 72,000 cases.
So then the answer. The answer. Because I'm sure there are people who tuned in and they're like, okay, now, Doc, I heard everything. I heard everything that you suggested. I heard everything from diet to exercise to, you know, more water, more oxygen to the brain, you know. But now, I got mama sitting here in the room with me listening to this radio broadcast. You know what I'm saying? Now, what do I do? What do I do now? Okay, because my last few days, I've been up all night. I've been walking. I've been praying. I've been doing everything that I knew how. But my mama's like your mama was. You know what I mean? I tell her, let's go walk. She say, no, you go walk. You know? I say, let's. You know, what do I do? Somebody's saying, what do I do now?
Yeah, so well, there are other things that you can do too. So you got to be patient. But there are other things. There's some essential oils. Praise the Lord. There's some essential oils, like rosemary, for instance, has been shown to be effective in helping to to improve the conditions of people with dementia. Lemon balm, you know, I'm starting to use lemon balm lotion, rub on the people's skin, and that seems to help. There's a herb. They've done some studies on saffron, and it seems to have improved. So I would suggest that you hit the whole thing. You know, you don't you go. That's why I started out talking about you can't be moderate with this thing. You gotta hit this thing hard, and continue. There's a tonic that I use with my patients. That's high in B vitamins and some of the herbs. We call them nervines. That's good for the brain. What is it? It's neural nectar. We use that, and we just do various things to try to improve the condition. But you know, if you really can get them into the walking mode and start walking with them, but the key is to prevent. You know, now a lot of people are sick. But even more are going toward Alzheimer's. If you can start preventing, it's much easier to prevent than it is to reverse. But the problem is that people don't want to change until, you know, they've sucked all the juice out the lemon, you know.
Mm.
Then they got to start eating the peeling. And so we're on the peeling now because we have allowed this thing to get far down the track, and we're trying to, you know, reel it back in. But I hear you. But those are the things that you got to do. And we got to keep praying and working. Now, you know, I believe that raw diet is very important, that juicing is important.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get mama or daddy to do it consistently and get them out walking, and, you know, you got to become a psychologist because you got to psych them into getting out there and start doing it every day. And then maybe by you getting a little exercise and changing your diet, you can keep yourself from developing Alzheimer's. So you're preventing yourself and you're helping to correct your parents or your grandparents. So that's what I would say is the key.
You know, there was a study or studies actually done, and like your thoughts on this too, that and this was dealing with women. Well, not just women, but anybody that actually uses hair dye, but primarily I'm sure women are probably the majority in that. But they were stating that women who actually had used hair dyes for consistently for 20 years actually doubled their risk of contracting dementia or Alzheimer's. Were you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with that particular study, but it makes sense that those poisons, you know, those poisons are something that they're destroying the hair. You know, so why not destroy the head that the hair is on? You know, so
down into the scalp.
Yeah, so I know many people are stop using these dyes because they you know, but so they rather. They rather look young, and so they use them, you know. And I'm sure that there's some that are more toxic than others. But yeah, I it makes sense to me. Makes sense.
What about reading? Doc, just simple things that a person can do, even if it's not just preventing, but even if a person has, say, full-blown Alzheimer's, I don't know, I'm not experienced, you know, having to care for an individual with Alzheimer's, but and they may be resistant to reading, you know, because I do know somebody who has been dealing with somebody with Alzheimer's, and they say that whatever they suggest that the other person, that they resist it, you know what I mean? So, but what about something like reading or different, or puzzles or, you know,
well,
things like that?
What the experts are saying is that you need to exercise the body and you need to exercise the mind. And so reading, solving puzzles, doing problems, these kinds of things help to delay and reverse Alzheimer's. And so it's if you look at it as a form of exercise, you know, you want to exercise the brain. And by doing so, you can make a positive impact on the disease process. And we need to start this at a young age. We need to start this at a young age. We need to start exercising that brain. When you exercise the muscles, they get stronger. Exercise the brain, they get stronger.
Doc, we've got a few minutes left. Definitely wanted to touch on EMF and the brain, electromagnetic frequencies. I saw some articles where they were talking about studies had shown a link between people that had exposure to electromagnetic frequencies and Alzheimer's. Have you seen any studies on that? I mean, and I also,
I've seen studies about EMF and many things. I've not actually looked at Alzheimer's and EMF, mm-hmm. but it makes sense. You know, I've looked at it in terms of brain tumors, even, you know, and EMF, and so clearly, those electromagnetic waves can have a deleterious effect on the brain, and we need to try to eliminate them as much as possible, you know. But I've not looked at Alzheimer's per se,
mm-hmm.
but that is a that's a very interesting observation, and I will look at it. I don't know why I didn't even think about it, but I didn't read about it, and so I didn't think about it.
Well, I want to, while we're talking about that, I actually just did a show recently on electromagnetic frequencies in the brain by my special guest for that show was Dr. Orwahehe Medurain Comet, and he talked about the link between, you know, electromagnetic frequencies and many, you know, diseases, and it was very, very powerful, very enlightening.
I'm clearly convinced that there's a link. You know, my concern is how do you eliminate it? How do you reverse it? You know, without ripping people off. You know, I'm very sensitive there. But yes, if we can eliminate some of these electromagnetic things, it appears that many of the disease processes are associated with that, and it makes sense that Alzheimer's, you know, dementia would be one of the ones that would be affected.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, I want to encourage you to go scroll down the archives. You can listen to that show again. The author and the special guest for that show was Dr. Orwahehe Medurain in Comet. That was within the last 2 months, so it'll be on the first page of the archives. So if you are interested in that, then by all means, and I encourage you to listen to it. You should be interested in that. So please take a moment, scroll down when you get a chance and listen to that. Dr. Watkins, I invite you to listen to that as well. Very, very, a lot of positive information I know that you would be interested in. Mucus in the brain, Doc. Mucus, that's a big thing that a lot of times people, you know, when you talk about mucus, of course, you got to talk about mucus forming food. So, of course, dairy would be high on
dairy,
that.
Dairy is the number one that comes to my mind, you know. You know, when you eat that dairy, you know, but sugar also is you know, a form of mucus. And so, once again, I've not looked at the relationship between mucus and Alzheimer's per se, but you just think that mucus really clogs the system up, you know. You look at the joints, you know, all this arthritic pain in part is due to the mucus. You know, when I put people on my fasting program, the cleansing, getting those toxins out the system, the joint, the inflammation in the joints, the swelling in the joints actually decrease, as well as, of course, does pain, you know, and it happens in a short period of time. And so, you know, eliminating those things like mucus, I mean, and the mucus producing foods can be really very, very significant.
And so this fast that you're doing, it is a 2-week fast. It's 14 days, no solid food for 14 days.
No solid foods for 14 days. We have them drinking water, herbal tea, vegetable broth, fruit and vegetable juices, and there's some herbs that we have that one for the organs, one for the colon, one for parasites, and one for life elimination, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those people who have who are overweight, we have even have one for help them lose some weight, you know, pounds off.
What about somebody with Alzheimer's fasting? Or, you know, would that be a consideration? Or is, because I would think that with all of the juicing that would be involved in your program, that they would be getting a lot of nutrients, healthy nutrients for the brain. Their brain would be bombarded with nutrients, you know, which is needed. Fasting in Alzheimer's, would fasting be a consideration for somebody with Alzheimer's?
I believe it definitely would be, because, as I said, it gets rid of the poisons out your system, and your mind gets clearer. You know, even a person who is does not have Alzheimer's, they get clearer. And let me drop. I started out talking about these tangles and plaques. They've done studies, and they've seen that for the most part, people 30 and younger don't have them, but they have actually seen in autopsies people who have died, these plaques and tangles start as early as 20 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we need to recognize that who we are to be, we're now becoming. So you know, we're laying the foundation for Alzheimer's to occur in our bodies at a much higher rate.
You know, Doc, there's a study or statistics show that African Americans in the U.S. are twice as likely, and Hispanics are 1.5 times more likely to get Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia than Caucasians. Any thoughts on why that might be?
I'm not really sure why it is. We tend to do things to an excess, and in addition to that, all the stress that's on us. I hate to bring it up, but we're in a racist society, and racism is very stressful, because it's not just that people dislike you; they have ill intent, and they do everything they can to many people do everything they can to bring harm to you, and that becomes stressful. And so stress has a very negative impact. And so we need to look at every every modality that we can come up with to make a difference in the lives of the people that we come in contact and ourselves. The life you save just may be your own or someone close to you. You know, it's one of my little sayings over the years.
Well, you know what's interesting, Doc, and I know we got to run, but I just wanted to throw this out there because you brought up stress. One of my guests, Dr. Raul Nefa Amin, wrote a book called Stress Free for Life. And in it, he discusses stress and posits the position that nothing in and of itself is inherently stressful. But it's, and I know you will agree with this, that it's our reaction, it's our stress response to whatever the situation is that is actually the source of our stress. Because, for example, just this might not be a good example, but, you know, let's say you take two people. One loses, both of them lose the job. They both get fired, right? One wants to cuss the person out, go back and shoot up the place. The other person is like, well, hey, I can get another job. Well, you take two people, both get robbed, you know. They both get beat down. One wishes hell and, you know, damnation on the perpetrator. The other, you know, says, he's thankful. I'm thankful they didn't kill me, right? I get to go home to my family, you know.
And I don't know if we've ever really discussed this, but I have a whole presentation that I've done on why people react differently. But the simple answer is a summation of all their experiences in life. And so stress does not come from without. Stress comes from within. Stress is our response to a particular situation. And the issue is, why do we respond the way we respond, and what can we do to change it? Once again, the simple answer is words. You know, the words I speak into thee, their spirit and their life. If we start putting the right words deliberately into our brains, that helps to get us started down the pathway of healing and success. But
you know, I got to give you there's this book, man. I mean, we're having this interview, but we're having this conversation, right? And there's this book I got to get to you. It's called Heal and Enhance Your Brain Through Kemetic Meditation, and in it, the author, Dr. Raul Nefa Amin, discusses that we actually have four brains. Actually, the animal brain, or the reptilian brain, the mammalian brain, the neocortex, and the prefrontal lobe. Okay, and that it is our identification with being human. We think that we're human beings, right? But his position is that we're human is just a step in the evolutionary process, that we are actually divine. But the fact that we identify with our humanness and say, I mean, we excuse all of our faults on our being human. Guy comes home, his wife catches him in bed with another woman. It's like, hey, baby, I'm only human. What do you expect? You know, people grieve at funerals. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, I'm only human. That was my mom. She died. What do you expect? I'm supposed to cry, right? You know, but human, if you look at all of the ills that are in the world today, they're caused by who? Humans. Humans are the cause of the ozone layer being depleted. Humans are the cause of pollution. Humans are the cause of every condition in the world that's negative. Humans caused it. Okay, so if we take the position that we are divine, inherently divine, and not human, then that, of course, gives us something to aspire to be, which is divine. But if we just excuse everything on the fact that we're human, then even the stress responses we look at and say, well, that's only natural. But his position is that anything that's harmful to you can't be natural to you. So if being human and being stressful releases cortisol and other harmful hormones into the bloodstream, causing you to lower your IQ, you know, behave irrationally or whatever. That's not natural to the way God created the body. But that's a whole nother.
If you're trying to get me to say that crying at my mama's funeral is not good, I'm not going to say that. But, and I know that's not what you're saying. But clearly, the degree at which we respond is due to who we are. You know, it's not automatic. It's not just natural. It is how we respond based on who we are. You know, based on the words that we speak to ourselves. You know, I made a decision when my mother died that my mother wanted me to go on, that she would want me to do the work that I'm doing and do it even more massively. You know, that's who she was. The undertaker told me, "I'm gonna make your mother so you won't ever forget." I said, "Look here, man. Let me just tell you, save your energy. You know, there's nothing you can do to affect my memory of my mother. She is indelibly imprinted in my brain. I am who I am because of her. So, you know, there's nothing you can do." But so, yes, I cried. We cry at funerals, but we move on. You know, it's good. I think it's good to cry. That you've had a relationship with someone that you can express emotion if they pass or if they're sick or et cetera. But that shouldn't be.
But what if in the process makes you sick? Okay, you know, what if in the process?
What makes you sick is not the short term. All right, what makes you sick is the law on the chronic part of it. You know, where day in and day out. We can't get out of bed. We the lights are out in the house and we stop.
Right.
That's the overreaction to the situation, which is, you know, stress is normal. I mean, I believe God created a stress response. You know, those adrenal glands, they produce the cortisol, they produce the adrenaline. You know, that's normal. But what is abnormal is when we are constantly under stress, when we constantly are reacting. The body is just pouring these hormones into our systems on a regular, consistent basis, and we're having problems. That's where the problem is.
Let's take, for example, because hopefully people don't have people that die in their family every day that would actually cause them to have to try to stay at peace or keep their peace in a situation like that. But let's say it's a job, okay, and your supervisor is like, you know, you got the supervisor from HELL, right? You know, I mean, it just rides you and dogs you, but you got to go in there every day, or at least until you find something else, you got to go in there every day. Now that's 8 hours.
But you don't have to. I deal with this all the time, and I know I have a patient. She's from Alabama, and she worked. And one of the federal governments, and her boss was giving her HELL, brother. And so I told her, the next time your boss starts acting a fool, just laugh. You know, just laugh. I said, your boss can't fire you. You know, if God wants you there, ain't nothing she can do. You know.
I think you're crazy anyway, right?
Yeah, I said she already thinks you're crazy. I mean, I actually told her that. I said, she already thinks you're crazy. So just go out and laugh. You know, and not allow it to affect you, because stress doesn't come from without. Stress comes from within. It's your response to her that's killing you. And so I didn't see her for about 2 years, man. And she came back. She said, "Doc, I didn't get another doctor." But remember my boss? I said, "How can I forget her? You talk about her all the time." He said, "Well, she got fired, and I got promoted, and I've been traveling around, you know, helping these black colleges get money from the federal government." I mean, it's like, you know, it's the response to the stress, not the stress itself, not the stressor that's causing the problem. My wife doesn't make me sick.
If it was a stressor, if it was actually the event, it would have to be the same for everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly,
I mean,
exactly. And different people respond differently to situations, you know. So it's my response to what my wife does or doesn't do, you know. That's it. So we have to, and I tell people all the time, you got to take responsibility, because if my wife is the problem, then I got to wait on her to change. If I'm the problem, I can get on my knees and me and the Lord can have a conversation, and overnight the problem is solved. And so that's where we have to go, Juanza. We have to recognize, yes, stress is normal, And sometimes we'll be hurt. You know, if your mother died, you don't feel hurt. There's something wrong with that relationship, brother. You know.
But now here, check it out. What you said was, you said stress is normal. Okay, it might be normal, but is it natural? That's the point I'm making.
It's natural. It's natural and normal. It's natural and normal. God put adrenaline in the body for fight and flight, man. You know?
Anybody else want to join in this conversation? Just press one. Go ahead, Doc. How you good on time?
I mean, it's natural. You know, however, the prolonged stress is what's abnormal. You know?
Now, let's say, for example, you take a marriage, right? Or, again, the same situation with the supervisor. Okay, supervisor's riding the employee, or, you know, marriage is rocky or whatever. But now, rather than the person, what if the person took the position that, as opposed, again, back to opposed to being human, I am divine, and this situation that I'm being confronted with is actually not against me. It's actually an opportunity sent from God, okay, for me to exercise peace in it. And as a result of me exercising peace in it, I grow and get wisdom out of it, as well as
exactly,
power.
Exactly. And that's how we got to look at our stressors. You know, I mean, I'm not happy my mother died, but I tell you, I take it and build on it. You know, my brother died. And I didn't know what to do to help him at the time. But since that time, I've had other people with the same illness. And I said, I'm getting you well, because I didn't know what to do to help my brother. You know, because really I was in denial. This is not my brother, you know. And so I ignored the situation as opposed to tackling it and doing something about it. See, stress can affect us in many ways, you know. And so we have to confront the stress, but at the same time, we can't say that the stress is not natural. Excessive stress is not natural.
Well, you know, and the reason I just want to say this, that
and I don't think
you're
going to find any reputable medical book that's going to go along with your theory there, brother.
That stress is not natural.
That is not natural. It is natural.
I'd say it's normal.
And it's actually beneficial, because if that lion is coming at you, and you're gonna just you know.
No, I ain't saying you sit there and meditate.
your response is called stress, man.
Okay, so the fight or flight response is called stress.
That's what stress is. All right.
Okay.
It is prolonged stress that's the problem. You know.
Well,
your child is about to get hit by a car. You go and act. That's stress. That's the stress.
But what
process
I was talking about was the emotional responses to, you know, again, like, for example, you know, you're in a situation where you got a supervisor that's, you hate going into work every day, or you're in a situation like your marriage, or, you know, whatever, or something like that, or you might be fighting with your children every day, you know what I mean, or something like that. I mean, not so much the fight or flight things where, you know, somebody pulling a gun on you or whatever, and you know, because of the built-in fight or flight mechanism that came with creation, you know, that came with part of the animal or the reptilian part of the brain, but just talking about the things that you can control. Okay, for example, for example, we could say, okay, I'm going to hold my breath. Although we breathe unconsciously, we don't even think about it, we can determine I'm going to hold my breath for so long. But nobody that's listening to this call can say, I'm going to stop my heart from beating for the next 15 seconds. We can't do that. You know,
but you can't speed your heart up.
It's going to continue to beat without our permission. You know?
But you can't,
so
you can't alter that heartbeat. You can speed it up. You can slow it down. You know, I mean, I noticed one of my patients one time. Her pressure was higher than what I thought it should be, and so I said, I want you to take a deep breath and blow it out, and relax, and her pressure came down 10 points. So she the breathing, the deep breathing, had an impact. The relaxing had an impact. That was a deliberate thing. And so we can definitely positively or negatively affect the speed of our hearts. But I dare say we could actually stop the heart. I've seen many people decide to die. In fact,
you know, maybe they felt like they didn't have anything else to live for. Somebody in their family died.
No, man. I mean, the first time I saw this thing, it blew my mind. I remember the guy's name. It was Stevenson, and I was in residency, and I was still in surgery, and we came to see him. He was in surgical ICU. He'd had cirrhosis of the liver. He had a lot of bleeding. And we came to see him, and he had gone into renal failure because I was actually on transplant service at the time. And he started thanking us for all we'd done for him. And so we said, you know, you're welcome. And then I went to the desk to write my notes. I said, wait a minute, this guy is talking about he's going to check out of here. And I took the things back. I said, look, man, you're actually getting better. You know, he said, no, doc. He said, I'm a burden to my wife. You know, she's a, you know. I said, no, you're actually getting better, man. And I thought I had talked him into living. That by the time the day was over, he was dead, man. He actually stopped his heart. You know, he stopped his heart. And he didn't pull out any tubes. His brain, he turned his heart off with his brain.
He pulled a Fred Jaffer on him.
Yeah, man. He died.
I'm going to join you, honey.
I'm gonna join you. That's right. And he died. So we can. But normally that's not what you're referring to. And I understand that. And I'm not trying to be.
I understand. I know what you're saying. I know you're not trying to just pull out an example just to make a point. You know. I understand.
Yeah. But see, there's something called moderation. There's something called moderation, you know, and we need to recognize that, you know, I was driving home, Cleveland, Ohio. I was by myself, and you know, when you're by yourself, you can solve all the problems of the world. So I was in deep thought during the trip, and as I drove into Cleveland. There was a storm brewing over Lake Erie, and the thought hit me that we need water. Can't live without it, but too much would kill us, you know. So even the quote stress has to be in moderation, you know. Or you may want to call it a different thing. You know, you may say, well, stress is a negative term. I won't call it stress. I call it fight and flight, you know.
But what if, Doc, because it's hard for a lot of people to even fathom a world without stress, okay? And, again, keeping in mind that the stress is in the response and not in the event. Okay, so for example, let's say you come home from work.
The stress can
right
be
now.
In the event. Also, if that man is beating on his wife, that's part of the event. That's stress.
Now, of course,
the response
that would be then this fight and flight.
That's
you know,
exactly. So I mean, let's not over.
Wait a minute, Doc, I'm talking about the emotional
intellectualize
response,
this
right?
thing.
Well, let's say I'll give you an example. Let's say, for example, you take two women, all right? Both of them are being cheated on, okay,
mm-hmm.
by their husband, okay? One of them says, you know what, I'm going to show this so-and-so what it feels like. Okay, I'm going to go out here. He need to know what it feels like. Okay, so I'm going to do the same thing, right? One, you know, peacefully, as you know, I'm not going to try to change this man. This is who he is. This is what he wants to do. Who am I to try to make him? If that's what he wants, that's the life he wants to live, that's the lifestyle he wants to pursue, then, you know, hey, you know, so be it. I'm out of here. Okay? One raises Cain, right? One throws stuff, goes and breaks the man's car windows out, you know, all the while. All right, now this ain't fight or flight here, okay? She's just taking it upon herself to, you know, she's angry, she's mad, her blood pressure has risen, okay? And now she's in a note, she flicked, she lost it, okay? The other one is at home packing, okay? Gently, quietly, getting the kids together, we're out. You know, who was the better of the two? One just raised her blood pressure up, you know, causing bad things to happen to her body now. She could have a stroke, you know. The other one is peacefully saying, you know, okay, just humming, you know, now that we've come to the end of the road, you know. So who's the better for it? Who's the better because of the response? Now, if the
I'm not gonna judge that because, you know, you may have your opinions on it, but different, you know, at least two of the responses can be appropriate. You know, the Bible gives the one thing for divorce is adultery. So the Bible says that's a reason you can leave. The other person can choose to say, Lord, I'm gonna put this rascal in your hands, and I'm gonna leave it there. Now she's gonna still be stressed, but her stress is gonna be at a different level, you know, because every time he comes in, she ain't gonna be singing, you know, to God be the glory.
My question would be is a peaceful response out of the realm of reality? Okay.
It certainly is in the realm of possibility. Okay.
But it's unlikely. And it probably
no,
is.
No. There are different people who respond differently. But I don't think that you're going to find anybody who's going to be happy.
I wasn't even suggesting that, but they can be happy that they're at peace. They might not be happy that, for example, the man cheated, but they can be happy they're.
Can you be at peace and stress at the same time?
I doubt it.
because there's going to be a reaction, but in that peace, it's going to be minimized. You know, but there's going to be reaction. He or she ain't going to be singing, you know. You know, I give an example. When I was in the Army, we'd be marching, and they the guys would be singing, Jody Got Your Girl and Gone, you know. And they would be singing because I wasn't going to sing about no Jody Got My Girl. Number one, Jody didn't have my girl. And if he did, I ain't going to be singing about it. So it's like, you know, I mean that's what we actually did. It was in March, you know. Jody Got Your Girl. Man, ain't no Jody Got My Girl. You crazy, you know. But we have to recognize, and I think we're getting a little off the subject in my time.
We're talking about Alzheimer's, weren't we?
yeah. But the problem is the brain. Responds and the real point that we wanted to make today is that it is due to the things that we are doing to a great degree, and we can choose the kinds of foods that we're eating, and there's very little controversy on that, at least from the people who studied it. The studies show that high fat animal fat diet, and let me just say, salmon is 40 to 60% animal fat. And so, you know, even that salmon is contributing to Alzheimer's disease. And so we have to, you know, just be cognizant of what we're eating, those refined foods, that sugar, you know, the coffee, the other foods that are negative. You know, it's amazing. We promote, it seems like the things that we promote are all negative, you know. The cigarettes, all this stuff, you know, the liquor, all this stuff is having detrimental effects on our bodies. Why would a society promote things that's killing us? You know, that's something we need to discuss at some point, you know. Why would a society promoting food stuff that's killing you? You know, there's not one good food advertised on television. Not one. Not one, brother. Not one.
You know, somebody said once, Doc, that if you have a, let's say you take a few fish and you pull them out of the pond and one or two of the fish are diseased, you know, then you can blame the fish. You know, okay, it's these fish that are diseased. But if you pull out, you know, the half the fish in the pond and they're all sick, then you can't blame the fish for being sick if the pond is polluted, right?
Yeah.
I think I heard that from a Dr. Owahehe Maduran comment. So to answer your question, you know, maybe it's the pond that's polluted that promotes.
Well, the pond is polluted. The pond is polluted.
It's promoting cigarettes
and
alcohol.
Yeah. And but see, we have to therefore choose to be radical, and have to go against the values of the norms, the folk ways of the society. Merton had a theory of alienation, and he said that black folks they wanted the goodies, but they recognized that if they followed the laws and you know, mama and grandma and grandpa been following his laws, and they ain't getting the goodies. And so they alienated themselves to the laws, but decided to get the goodies. We have to decide that sometimes we have to alienate ourselves against what's going on in society, you know, and come up with some other laws more appropriate for us, and that's more consistent with what God, I believe God set up in the first place. You know, we can't go by what society says all the time, because society, you know, I mean, some of the things, you know, I mean, I hear people railing against folk because they want to believe that what God set up is real. I mean, there's certain things you better not say on radio or television. They'll have your head, and it goes directly against what God has said. You know, so man, you know, this world is ruled by the devil, but God's coming to clean it up, and just hold on.
You know what, Doc? I wish we had more time than what we
I'm
had, brother.
You,
because I mean, that's
gone,
a whole other
brother.
Discussion. That's a whole other
yeah.
discussion there too. You know,
well, there are many more discussions,
I,
and if God, if the Lord is willing, and the creek don't rise, we're gonna come back again.
Yes, sir. I really, truly appreciate the time that you gave us today. The show normally was scheduled from 8 to 9. You gave us some more time, and I really enjoyed the conversation. Again, I got to get you these couple of books, though, Doc. And I would really love your opinion after you read them. Again, one is Stress Free for Life by Dr. Raul Neffa Amen. Another book by him is Heal and Enhance Your Brain with Comedic Spirituality. And again, in that book, he discusses the four brains, the reptilian brain, the mammalian brain, the neocortex, and the prefrontal lobe, and how these brains developed over time, just evolved over time, and that they're actually four distinct brains, you know. And so I think that you would really find that discussion, that book, interesting, as well as, again, Stress Free for Life. I want to encourage the listeners to definitely go down the archives on page one. There's a show that I did with Dr. Owahehe Maduran comment on EMF, electromagnetic frequencies. Is it hurting our communities? Again, EMF, electromagnetic frequencies. Is it hurting our communities? Yes, it is. And you, you know, we touched upon it in this interview today. I think that you'll find that that's a very useful, helpful, and very informative interview. Dr. Watkins, again, my brother, man, we had a lot of catching up to do, man. We seemed like we did it.
Yes, sir. Well, it's, hopefully it won't be so long next time.
I appreciate it.
Get back on our monthly schedule. Praise the Lord.
Yes, sir. I just want you to know, Doc, I really appreciate all of the work that you've done, and I refer people to you. I tell people I'm always constantly sending people shows that we've done with the hopes that they would hear you, feel your passion, and as a result, contact you because, again, you're one of the pioneers in the holistic health field in this country. You were doing it long before many people got on board with it, and you set a high bar. My brother, and I just pray to God continue to open doors for you, that you may continue to do the healing work that you've done. God calling you out of surgery, so you really want to heal people. I'll teach you how to, so that they won't get sick in the first place. And if they do get sick, how you can reverse that naturally. And again, Alzheimer's is no exception. It might take a little longer, but because it takes longer for those cells, those brain cells, to regenerate, but it's possible, right, Doc?
That's right. That's right. Well, I want you to just continue to do the work that you're doing, and letting people know that they don't have to be sick, that illness to a great degree is a choice, and that we should choose to be healthy. Choose you this day who you'll serve. You know. So let's get it together. Let's get our community together. Let's stop being so fatalistic. Let's believe that God will help us if we're willing to help ourselves. And if folk are interested in some of the things that we're doing, they can check our website out at www.twiliving.com. TWIliving, that stands for the Watkins Institute.com. They can call our office at 202-388-0999, and we'll be glad to assist them. And once again, my brother, I wish I had more time, but because this is such a powerful, powerful discussion. But we'll get back again real soon, I pray.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, everybody, if you like Doc and you want to hear more of Doc, he's got his own show on WPFW. Matter of fact, it comes on every Monday. Isn't it from 2 to 3, Doc?
That's right, 2 to 3 Mondays, 89.3 FM. If they're out of the area, it's WPFWFM.org, and they can get it live.
That's
or they can
help.
Get the archives.
And if you want some dessert, there's another show. You got the Monday Night Call, right? You're still doing the Monday Night Call?
Monday Night Call. I have a Wednesday Night Call. They should be able to find out all those online there and get all that information. Plus, we have a cancer support group call that we're doing. We're getting ready to start a diabetic support group. And then after that, we're going to do a hypertension support group. So we're trying to help the community to get well. And so there's a lot of stuff on the plate. But as God gives me energy, I'm going to continue to grow and develop.
I'm very interested in that 2-week fast, Doc. I'd like to start it around the new moon. So I'll be in contact with you to get more information about that.
All right.
Anybody
else
my special guest
interested, they can contact us also.
Okay. Well, everybody, my special guest is Dr. Ted Watkins. Wow. What a powerful show, Doc. Again, thank you for all of the information, and we'll be definitely getting back in contact with you. I know you had some other things going on this day, but thank you so much for the extended time. I shall be in touch. Doc, you still with us? Okay, Dr. Watkins is gone. Everybody, thank you again so much for your time. I truly enjoy having these discussions and bringing them to you. As you can tell, Dr. Watkins is very passionate about what he does. And check him out again, the Watkins Institute. And again, you can hear him live tomorrow, Monday, and that's every Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. on 89.3 FM. That's in Washington. So if you want to listen to them online, that's www.WP, like Paul, F like Frank, W.org. Okay, and then there'll be a schedule of shows, and you can scroll down there and find out, you know, what time he's coming on. But I can tell you that it's 2 to 3, and that's every Monday. Okay, and so it's a call-in show, same format. You can call in and ask any questions that you might want concerning holistic health. So again, everybody, thank you so much for your time. Again, don't forget, scroll down the first page of the archives. You'll see EMF, Is It Hurting Our Community? That's a show that I recently did with Dr. Oluwahehi Medarian Comet. Also, I recommend the book, Stress-Free for Life, with Dr. Raul Nefer, as well as you can listen to the show and get the book, YAB, Heal and Enhance Your Brain, through Comedic Meditation as well. Again, Alzheimer's is something that can be a very, very trying situation, not just for the person that's been diagnosed with it, but the person that's caring for the person that's been diagnosed with it. And so for all of you who have been diagnosed, well, are caring for those that have been diagnosed with it, stay strong. Stay strong. I know. It's not easy. It's not easy. But go back and listen to this show. Share the show with other people that you know that might need to hear it, because there are some things that can be done that can help to alleviate, reduce the situation that you're dealing with to a point where it's more manageable and possibly even reverse the condition completely, okay? So there are no guarantees. We're not selling a pill, okay? We're giving information, okay? So thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it. Thank you all for hanging in there for the whole show. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Again, go down the archives. We've done shows with Dr. Watkins all throughout the archives, Dr. Ruby Lathan, Brother Coy Dunstan, who cured his mother of cancer in both breast, the liver, and the colon. We've got all kinds of shows. We've got shows on spirituality, of course, with Dr. Raul Nefer Amen, Dr. Orwa Hehime Duran Comet, Orwa Amtahudi Kamo, as well as Hexham Suheru Shekameb Nater. We've got Queen of Fools in the archives. I mean, we've got a lot. Dr. Akmal Moore Killers in the archives. So, I mean, just scroll down. You'll see all kinds of shows. Matter of fact, our next show coming up, I believe, is going to be on this upcoming Tuesday with Professor Joseph Geiger. He's been an entrepreneur for over 50 years. So all of you entrepreneurs out there, he's written an awesome book. It's called The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. And we're going through the book principle by principle, chapter by chapter. So if you're an entrepreneur or you've considered becoming an entrepreneur, you definitely want to tune in Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. And definitely we'll tell you how you can get the book. And we've got shows with him in the archive. So if you're an entrepreneur and you want to know how to do it the right way, okay, then definitely listen to those shows and grow, okay? So everybody, I want you to enjoy your day. I have had an awesome time this morning starting it off with you and Dr. Ted Watkins. My name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who in giving receives more. Who are you? Have a great day. Peace.